Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening. We are very honored to be joined once again by Yes That Alan, Alan Hancock of Watchman Monitoring, with a special announcement. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I always love the show and everything you guys are doing. It's a fantastic resource for the community, and greatly appreciate it. So glad to be a part of it every once in a while. That works for me.
Yeah, thank you. You've been an awesome supporter in many ways since early on, so we really appreciate it. It's good to be talking with you again. I think we saw you last out at ACES in Austin last year, or this year, I should say. And speaking of conferences, you're going to the MacTech conference coming up very shortly, in a couple weeks, right?
That's right. So by the time this goes live, it'll be next week. It all kicks off with the pre-conference workshops on November 15th, and those are actually some pretty juicy ones. Greg's going to be talking about Monkey. There's a fantastic wireless session. There's a couple other sessions that are just totally worth it. I mean, I would love to go to all three, like all four of those pre-conference sessions. And then for everyone who's going to make it into the event Tuesday for those pre-conference workshops, we've got a little extra something, a beta certification that we're releasing that Tuesday evening that'll include dinner. So just to give people somewhere to go and kind of enjoy the event and then move on to the rest of the rest of MacTech conference, which is actually pretty fantastic. So but what we're releasing is a certification, something that helps that's designed to help people take the intangible, yeah, I'm proactive, and make it into something that the average computer user might have a better idea. I mean, we all know what the words proactive support means, but in practice, it's not necessarily very clear about, you know, well, what does that do for, like, what does that mean? How does that different from what I'm getting normally? And so the goal of this website and the certification is to go through a lot of the best practices that we've seen our subscribers use. This goes back to my practice, which needed something like Watchman Monitoring, which is why it was created. Onto the best of the ideas that I've seen from subscribers over the years, and tell stories that make it tangible. Like, what does proactive support actually mean and do? How can it help me? It's going to be filled with stories that anyone is welcome to submit. There's not going to be any cost associated with, if you have a story to tell about how you've been proactive with some of your customers, we'd invite, welcome, encourage people to, IT professionals to submit their story on the site. And that will be included. It'll be reviewed just to make sure that, there's no spam coming through, and then posted back with a link to your own site. So certainly anyone who wants to submit a listing can take as little or as much credit as they'd like. They can make an anonymous third party. They can talk about whatever names as ever they want, however they want. And then their story will be linked back directly to their own site as a way of promoting that, yes, they are proactive. An end user who's visiting this site would, maybe get a better idea of what is it actually, why is this important?
Part of the beta certification will be invited to come up and testify. Do you find, as the maker of Watchman overall, as an aggregate, do you find that people are challenged to leverage it?
It's a story that we get on a regular basis, which is we're taking the site to allow people to, just tell stories about what it is. We're going to have a paid certification that will be linked to a badge they can put on their own site, a link back. There's going to be a provider locator, locator map on the site as well. And it's all designed to be able to make it more tangible, because what we see on a regular basis is we get smart IT professionals who are signing up for Watchman Monitoring, and they get it, they like it. But then when it comes to showing it to their customers who would ostensibly have to pay for it, it's hard to make it real. It's hard to make it this tangible experience where you can say, look, yeah, I'm watching out for you. But when you're telling someone who, when you're interviewing with a new customer or you're rolling out a new rate plan, it's something that often you want to be able to have some more meat. And also in these stories, we'll be able to share with the other people some of the things that, some of these wins that you guys talk about on the show on a regular basis. And when you read, if you're an IT professional and you're coming to the site and you're reading about it, oh yeah, I do that. I can talk about that with my customers. Or oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I should start doing that. And it's this melting pot of ideas about how to do the thing that I love, which is instead of waiting for your customers to come to you with, hey, I have this problem, you need to come fix it. You going to them with your computer is having this problem. Here's how I think we can fix it. Lowering stress instead of waiting on a stressful event to bring in business.
That's the idea of being proactive, which I love about the product in general. But I had a quick question about the locator too. So right now with Watchman, you have a find a provider locator, which has been great for us. Is this locator going to be different in that aspect, or are you only going to include people that have the certification on the locator now?
The certification is going to be something that a listing on the locator will be tied to a certification. The certification will go through the process of certification is going through, some of the in-depth ideas that we've seen our subscribers do or gathered from other discussions to really drive home the different ways where an IT professional can be proactive. And can go through, and the exam is going to be an eventually be online, where other people could take it, because not everybody's going to be able to travel to the next certification, the next event. But the listings will be tied to an actual certification, and the certification comes through about an hour and a half's worth of content about. Different ways where IT professionals can take even better care of their end users, and come away from that with materials that talk about the things that other people have done. Maybe they can make other plans for their own, or if they're certified, maybe they're already if they come through the certification, maybe they're already doing that. It's not like there's a ton of new ideas, but there's the gathering and just getting in the mindset of. Oh, these are all the things I can do to, lower stress or, prevent data loss and downtime. But the locator will be tied only to certification. It won't be a matter of there won't be any other, you have to be using this product or you have to be, doing this thing. If you come through, go through the certification process, you'll be given the copies of the logo that you can put on your site or business card, and then link back to your potentially your own story that you may have posted to give an idea to give potential visitors to your site or to or to this site an idea of what they should be looking for in a professional.
I think stories are a really great way to communicate the whole concept to clients. I think it's kind of a brilliant move to collect these stories and, not only to point clients to directly, but like you said, for consultants to read and then be inspired by, not only to like do their own, do their own thing and adjust the way that they offer support, but also to be able to communicate those stories to clients and they can, it's good to have like a for instance when you're explaining to a client why, being proactive is just better overall. Do you have any stories? Speaking of stories, Alan, that come to mind that Watchman Monitoring subscribers have shared with you or from your own practice?
Just last week, we were dealing with had a subscriber come to us talking, and they had. Discovered that a hard drive on a Mac Mini was failing. It was set up in a RAID, and one of the drives was going bad. Watchman Monitoring had told them, And they checked, and all the backups were in place, and they were going to actually to do their presentation about, you know, talking about the new managed service plan with their customer. And in between the Monday that they got the alert and the Wednesday that they had that they were supposed to meet and present to get this business, the hard drive actually failed. So the server went down, but there was still no data loss because they were able to, you know, they were able to confirm just from the same report that while the hard drive was failing, there, you know, all the backups were intact. And sure, there was some downtime because, you know, they hadn't officially onboarded the customer. They were just doing their preliminary work. So there was some downtime, but there was no data loss. So that was nice. And, you know, that'll be, you know, they were saying that's going to be the story about the one that failed because it wasn't, things weren't checked in time. And so now they're, you know, making it a point to get to get their tools in place with all the customers, and and make sure they have a plan for, getting to action when they do see something bad like a hard drive failing. An enjoyable story.
Alan, I just want to sincerely thank you for Watchman Monitoring. I mean, honestly, if I think back to before I signed up for Watchman, and do you guys remember a time like 2, 3, 4 years ago? When did Watchman Monitoring come out, Alan? When did you guys first release it?
So I started using it internally in 2010, and we released it into the market middle of 2011. And have been growing steadily since then. But yeah, so for me, it's been a long time, and got a lot of people who would have to think back 4 or 5 years before they can before they knew what it would be before it was life without it.
Well, you know, for me, I didn't see the light until just a couple of years ago, and I obviously have not looked back since then. And I look back on those times before Watchman Monitoring, and I think, you know, it's like it was like a house of cards. I mean, those drives were still failing. You know, the RAM tests were still failing. The batteries were still failing. All those alerts that we get for our clients that, you know, without which the client would be like in the lurch, you know, and sometimes, you know, oftentimes having data loss or at least, inability to access the data because they would be, you know, they'd be down for a while or whatever the case may be. That was all still happening, you know, and it was kind of like a ticking time bomb, and it was just a big house of cards. And ever since putting Watchman Monitoring in place, I feel like everything is just a much better managed. You know, I'm much more aware of like the status of all my important clients, and it's just I just want to honestly thank you because it's been such a boon to my business.
Well, that's I appreciate that, and you know that of course is the goal. That's why I built the product so I didn't build it just for me, so I could be the one doing that just here in Baton Rouge. I built it to a spot where anybody could do that, and this certification is designed to help take that thing that you've discovered and other people are considering and don't know necessarily how to present. To new customers or to existing customers, and take something and make it more real, and go through the process of, you know, really driving home that mindset of what can we do to, you know, look out for our users and stay ahead of the game instead of waiting for the game to come, you know, crashing down in the middle of whatever you're planning on doing that day.
And this certification also adds to legitimacy for the consultant, because you're promoting this product and the client's trying to understand what you're telling them you're going to install for them, and whether this be business or home or whatever. But to say not only that you promote this product and you think it's good for them, but that you're certified to, I guess we can say, to work with it, so to speak. I think that also adds that level to show the end user or the client that you're legit and you know what it's about and you know how to operate it too. I mean, especially with the downsizing of Apple certifications, to have another cert under your belt, I'm sure is a big plus for most consultants.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sam. It adds a level of legitimacy to not only the product, but also to what you're doing. Alan, let's say I'm listening to this tonight and I'm a consultant and I am attending the event. How do I sign up? What do I need to do to make sure that I have a seat there?
There is a registration link on the page, and that will take you to a secure form that's there, and you can register. There's a limited number of seats; we're about half sold, so there's plenty people can people can still sign up. You'd pay for that there because this is the first exam, and it's the we're treating it like a beta, and so we sent out a newsletter to people who had signed up for that for a newsletter about you know, with a coupon for getting a discount on this initial exam, and yeah, it's, and then it'll be that Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We're serving dinner, so the registration fee is actually pretty much going to be covering the cost of the logistics, the room, the food. Not really designed to be a profit maker. This is really just a matter of bringing it to having a conversation piece for IT consultants as they're talking with each other or as they're trying to bring on business. Something to do for there. And I do want to point out that there's no official tie to, there is no requirement that one needs to be using watch and monitoring. Anyone who wants to put in a story about how they were proactive, with software, without software, the newsletter that they're putting out, anything, they're welcome to submit that. And anyone who wants to go to come to the certification is welcome to. Clearly, this is the backbone of what watch and monitoring is all about. So there is going to be a lot of crossover, but this is we're doing this more as a conversation piece for people the general public to have and to see this is important, this is why it's important, and then here's my logo saying that yes, I value being proactive this much, this is what it means to me. I've taken a certification, I've made sure that the things that I'm doing, I'm considering all these best practices as I run my business. And bring that to the table along with the hourly bill or the monthly retainer or however it is someone chooses to bill. It's a way of really putting the value in more of a tangible fashion.
Very good. So there's no exclusivity. If I've been listening to these shows or I've been visiting your website and I've always wanted to get started with Watchmen, but I haven't found the time or just haven't done it, that Tuesday evening could be a good way to start.
Absolutely. Yeah, there'll be plenty of people there. And that's one of the benefits of actually coming to the certification event. I mean, eventually this will be something that can be done online because not everybody can get there. But by coming to an event and talking with other people who are in the same boat, I mean, that's really, that's why we come to conferences in general. That's why ACES is such a great place to come. It's why the MacTech conferences are a great place to come, and all the rest. It's a matter of sharing ideas in conversations around around with other people who are thinking the same way, jotting those ideas down, and coming back to coming back to what you're doing after the event, and and implementing.
Just to throw this out there, it's not all disk failures and data loss. Being proactive can you can do that in a number of different ways. So I'll just give an example of one recent one that I consider sort of proactive support. It was my email announcing the new MacBook Pro to clients. I let clients know that there's Apple's going to have this announcement on Thursday coming up. I sent out I think the beginning of last week to all my clients who had expressed interest in a new MacBook Pro, who I had been telling for the last year or so to wait for the new one. It's going to be great. So I had over a dozen clients, sort of in the queue, ready and waiting to buy this new MacBook Pro. So I sent them an email sort of proactively saying, hey, this is coming up, get ready, check it out. You can watch live here at this link and so on. And I included a note there saying, if you're interested in buying, let us know. The most important spec that we need to know is how much disk space you're currently using. And so you can find out in the Apple menu, blah, blah, blah. And then I included a note for clients of CyMac Prime. That's our subscription, managed services plan, so to speak. For clients who are on CyMac Prime, we already have your specs on file, and we'll be letting you know, with priority what we recommend. So it's just another way of leveraging Watchman Monitoring, because that's where we get that information from. We have them in Watchman Monitoring, what we call CyMac Alert, and we You know, we know how much disk space they're using, and so we can make recommendations accordingly. So it's just another example of where, you know, we can just preempt that for a client. We don't have to wait for them to call us and say, I want this, and this is how much space I'm using, and that kind of thing. We can actively notify them and let them know what we recommend.
Absolutely. Right. Newsletters and regular communication are absolutely a key part of being proactive. Totally agree.
So will we receive some of those first honorary certifications, given how we've been ringing the Watchman monitoring bell all these years?
Honorary certifications are maybe a thing that will come if you want to come through the content.
So,
but
so no, Joe.
The point, yeah. I mean,
that sounds like a no. Okay.
Yeah, there is plenty of time that's gone into developing the curriculum, the questions, the testing site, and all that. You know, really, I think it is going to bring a lot of value with that, not just in the logo and the website to point to. As far as command control power goes, you know, we've got your back.
Yeah, Joe, this is like the, you know, I think I saw the episode in Happy Days. This is where Fonzie gets the diploma, the honorary diploma. This is about the equivalent that's what you get.
Happy Days reference. Wow.
If you make it through the Watchman monitoring drinking game on any given episode of Command Control Power, if you're standing at the end of that, you get an honorary certification. Yeah.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's a different certification, but yes, we got it.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that's awesome, Alan. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I think it's just great, you know, how you're just out there in the community. You add so much value to the community of Apple consultants, and I don't know what we would do without you. So we really appreciate it.
Well, very good. Glad to be here. Everyone here in the team at Watchman Monitoring is very happy to be doing what we're doing, and we love hearing from our subscribers on a regular basis. And this would be just one way to hopefully give something back as they go forth and present what it is that they have in mind, what it is that they're doing as they bring their support game to the next level.
You guys seen the video for the Surface Studio yet? This is the product that Microsoft released on Tuesday before the Apple event, a couple days before.
I literally just watched it.
This really makes me sad. I mean, it really makes me sad. I mean, I look at that, I feel like this thing in the pit of my stomach. It's like, that shouldn't be Microsoft.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be our hero, Apple, you know, right, doing these like crazy innovative things. I mean, I look at that product, and, you know, I'm not a graphic artist, but I want it. You know, I want to use it. I want to touch it. I want to start to work with it. It's pretty remarkable.
It's a brilliant ad, too. I mean, we've seen them gearing towards this already with their Surface devices and just having the all-in-one unit where Apple's separated out that design into laptops and iOS devices. So they graduated to this desktop studio version, which is it is an impressive commercial, and it looks like an impressive product.
Right. And whether that little gizmo that you put on the screen, that little tilty wheel thing is what we'll be using in the future, that's still, the jury's still out on that. But I don't know if you guys watch Black Mirror, but in, I think, season 2, somebody was using a product in the future that was very, very reminiscent of this Surface Studio, where they were, you know, looking at a computer and they were just flipping things, you know, very Minority Report-ish. How does Apple answer that? Think about this. I mean, you know, I'm not one of these guys who goes like, well, you know, if you know, so-and-so, you know, was still around, it wouldn't be this way. But think about, like, what would that be like? What would that meeting be like?
That's a good point. Heads would roll, I think, in that case, because, you know, Apple's, like, you know, one day later answer to this, which obviously they weren't necessarily privy to what Microsoft was going to announce or anything like that. But, you know, their answer in the news cycle was like a thin strip of a multi-touch Surface above the keyboard, you know, and it stands in stark contrast to this full screen tablet computer hybrid kind of thing. You know, massive display. It reminds me of like the original iMac and how like and how impressive it seems like as a physical like form factor. You know, not the original iMac, but like the first flat screen iMac. Right. You know, that kind of thing. Like it definitely is the kind of thing that looks like a tool for creative professionals. Like the original iMac, you know, you can move the screen around and like you can, you know, move it to how you work and adjust it and stuff.
Now I'm all sad about, I was all excited about my Touch Bar and getting my new MacBook Pro, but now you made me feel depressed about it, Joe. but I mean, think of it in the smartphone concept too. I mean, Apple was never really first to develop a lot of those features that, let's say, Samsung came out with, but they produced it with much fanfare and possibly better, let's say, in the next cycle. Right. And I don't know if we're seeing something similar here, if we're going to see something on the desktop line that would emulate something like that. But Apple was never first to market on a lot of those technologies in the smartphones, but they did it great after the fact.
I definitely want to talk about the new laptops, and I'm not sure this is even a fair comparison. I mean, I don't really think it is, but, you know, I see that product and I kind of like want to interact with it. I mean, I want to start to work with it and just see what it's like. It just seems to me like it's like the future. It speaks to me in a way that if you put an iMac side by side with it, it doesn't compare.
So I'm very impressed with it, Jerry. You should get one.
No, it just makes me sad. No, it makes me sad and it makes me kind of wistful, you know, because I think about the days when certainly Apple didn't have market share in the PC market, but there were lots of products that we could bring to our customers that were representative of what the current state of the art was, you know, whether it was some sort of a studio display from Apple or it was dome-shaped AirPorts. There were lots of really neat products that were not behind in the product cycle. They were current pieces of hardware that you could offer to professionals or semi-pros and be able to conduct your business. And I think overall, you know, if we just take a 10,000 foot view and look down on Apple and think about, you know, we as business professionals running our business, what do we have here? You know, we do have brand new Mac Pros, and I want to talk about those a little bit, but we're certainly lacking in a lot of different markets.
Well, yeah, the new MacBook Pro is one thing. I mean, that's certainly long overdue and looks really impressive. I was really impressed with the introduction video and so on and just the introduction in general. Notably absent were iMac update, Mac Pro update, you know, which came out, I think it was announced in like mid-2013. It shipped in December, like late December 2013. I mean, we're going on 3 years since it shipped. You could argue that that's really way overdue for an update. They have an impressive form factor in the Mac Pro, but no recent update to it. So there's definitely some holes in their lineup.
Do you think the delay in some of the other products like iMac and Mac Pro is, I mean, they have something up their sleeve that they just haven't had time or they haven't been able to release at this point yet?
I don't follow it closely enough to know due to like Intel's, you know, perpetually delayed processor updates and stuff like that. I think they just released the latest version or they're just around the corner or something like that. The new MacBook Pros have a processor that's like not the latest and greatest from Intel, right? But it's like one step back.
It's a Skylake processor in it, and it's not Kaby Lake.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe like Kaby Lake, you know, is what Apple's waiting for the new, you know, iMacs, for example. I'm not sure. There's certainly been a lot of criticism of Tim Cook in particular for being someone who's, you know, not interested in the Mac. You know, the quote about why would anyone buy a PC? I think Gruber's take on that might be worth considering, like that he was referring specifically to PCs and not computers, not a Mac. Yet taken out of context, you know, that's used to evidence that Apple doesn't care about the Mac, you know, in particular. Do they care about computers in general as opposed to iPads? I guess it's a good question, but then, you know, they did come out with the MacBook Pro with a nice, pretty innovative new feature. They're still obviously working on it. They haven't abandoned it.
I'm thinking of it in a slightly different context as well. Being a trainer, you know, we've seen less and less OS X certification courses and now a line of iOS courses that have come out. And we're seeing the OS X side dwindle a bit in terms of certification and people learning more about that operating system. And even on the training side, there's a shift towards iOS and deployment and smartphones and all that other stuff. So I think maybe not just in the hardware game, but in other aspects of Apple, we're seeing that push to mobile devices more than, like you said, laptops or desktops.
It seems like Apple took a stand at some point about there being sort of two distinct form factors. There's like the computers, you know, Macs in this case, and then there's mobile devices or like tablets, you know, iPads in this case. The iPads run iOS, the Macs run macOS, two different operating systems. Touch is not appropriate for a Mac because there's this sort of arbitrary distinction between like a computer and a tablet. Computer per se is something that you put on your desk and then you interact with it. It, you know, it has a keyboard that's separate from the display thing. We all know the form factors, you know, this sort of a notebook or a laptop form factor, the desktop with its external keyboard. Those, Apple says, are different because the screen sits immobile on your desk and you wouldn't want to reach out and touch it. You just wouldn't. You know, that's what they say. Your arm would get tired. Whereas, you know, the mobile devices are inherently more sort of personal and they're always in your hand. And so you're by definition, you're going to be touching them. And so that is deserving of a touch OS. And it was designed that way from the start, obviously. And the Mac OS clearly wasn't. Why take such a stand? I mean, touch features exist in Mac OS. You know, they're there kind of behind the scenes. You could add more touch features to the OS. John Gruber of Daring Fireball, he talks about it's not designed from the beginning for touch. The touch targets are too small. You wouldn't want to like tap a closed box with your pointer finger because you couldn't quite hit it, you know, and that kind of thing. These are like, because Apple's not actually saying this. Do you think that there's any validity to that? Like, is Windows on the right track in sort of merging the touch and desktop OSs, or is Apple more on the right track in considering these as two separate worlds?
We had heard a few years ago about convergence. There was a lot of talk with the Apple products and things converging and the Macs being more like iOS and iOS being more like Mac. And I think that the separate paths is clearly the right choice for Apple. Microsoft does struggle with it, trying to make one piece of software that's everything to everybody. And I do buy the argument that the touch points are too small for a touch screen. So I don't think that's inherently a wrong choice. I think when we first began talking about this, even taking just a big step back and looking at the big picture, and what I find is that we're late to market with products. Well, let me give you an example. I had a client who recently had an issue with a Mac Mini. It was a quad-core dual drive server model, and we needed to replace a drive. And he asked me over the phone before I suggested that, you know, we get a solid state and we just replace the drive and we're going to be in great shape. He said, well, why don't I just go out and buy a Mac Mini? I paused for a moment, and of course, I gave him the answer that any Mac professional would give him. And as the words were leaving my mouth, it kind of sounded ridiculous that we are in this position where I said, well, no, you've got a really good machine. That machine that's, you know, going on 3 years old now, that's one that they don't make anymore. And that's one that's really desirable on eBay. And, you know, this is great. And we're going to put in a solid state drive, and telling him that the brand new product that he could go down to the Apple store today and buy, in this given case, he's running Mac practice. So the Mac Mini is the form factor he needs. You know, he'd be buying something that's 2 years old and it's only a dual core processor. I mean, that's just such a weird conversation that I'm having with him. He understood everything that I told him, and it just leaves the consumer kind of like walking away, scratching their head. Geez, I just heard from a Mac professional that, you know, the stuff that's in the store is old and it's not as good as the one I have that's 3 years old. I don't get that, you know? It just doesn't make any sense to me. I think if we look back on Mac's past, there might have been examples when, you know, in the G5 series, like, oh, well, we, you know, don't buy that Mac Pro because it's a year old or whatever. I don't think we've ever been in a position where we've got so much beard on all these products, you know, the AirPods, the Mac Pros, the Mac Minis. And if they're going to phase them out. You know, we'll head in another direction for solving those issues for our clients. But at the same time, they've kind of bought into this Apple ecosystem, and they're excited about it. And that's great. You know, it's a great company to work for indirectly. You know, we all work for Apple, and it's a great company to kind of like put your money on. If you're going to put your money on Microsoft or Apple, Apple's still a really good bet. But we're kind of in that weird position of having to, you know, scramble around. Well, let's make do with this for another year. Well, you know, don't buy that iMac right now because we think there might be a processor refresh. Well, when's it going to be? Well, we don't know. It could be 6 months from now. We don't know, but it's going to be better, you know. I just think it's weird.
It is really weird. I've been telling clients to wait for the new MacBook Pro for like a year, like a full year, you know. And it's just embarrassing. It's like, I know I keep saying wait, but like really, it's really coming soon, I swear. And now it's out and it's like not shipping for weeks. And then there's, you know, people, a couple of my professional clients have said to me, you know, the way I use my MacBook Pro, I oftentimes if I'm working, you know, I'm at my desk and I've got it like plugged into a keyboard and mouse, it's propped up. I do use the, in one case, the client does use the built-in screen. She, you know, sets it up on like a stand to use the built-in screen, but she has a keyboard and mouse on her desk that she uses. And so she feels like she wouldn't really be like reaching up to use the touch bar very much. And I sort of get that. You know, my desk at the office, I use it in, I guess you call it clamshell mode, plug into like a Thunderbolt 2 dock, which gives me like mini display port out to my display. I've got a wireless keyboard and mouse on my desk. I don't use my built-in, you know, display on my MacBook Air when I'm in the office. So my new MacBook Pro would sit there basically closed and with the touch bar, you know, just sitting there idle. I would use it at home, so I am looking forward to it, and I'd use it out, you know, on the road and stuff like that. It's not exactly like, well, this was really worth waiting for. I'm glad I waited. It's, you know, it's so great. I think it's interesting, and I'm looking forward to using it, but I don't know. It's really weird. And to your point on the Mac Mini, Jerry, it's according to Mac rumors, it's been 747 days since the last release. So 2 years, as you said, and the most recent rumor about the new Mac, about the Mac Mini, was from December 31st, 2015. So we're going on a year since like any word about the Mac Mini has crossed anyone's mind. And it's what's coming from Apple in 2016. Apple Watch 2. Yep, got that. iPhone 6C, which turned into, I guess, you know, didn't exactly name it that, but anyway, moving on. iPhone 7, Skylake MacBooks, and we've got everything except for a new Mac Mini at this point.
And a Mac Pro. And AirPort needs to be refreshed. We have no displays that we could sell our clients. Those have been end of life. I agree with Joe. And we could probably spend a whole hour talking about the validity of the touch bar. I'm going to bang this drum for the whole show. Just stepping back and looking big picture, I think we could definitely say, Cupertino, we have a problem.
You've been dying to say that, haven't you?
We have a show title. Very nice.
The only other thing that's holding some people back, obviously, I haven't heard from anybody in my life in the last few years that have considered switching to a Windows operating system from a Mac. But that's the other piece that holds us together, as I think a lot of people still feel, for whatever is coming out with bugs and stuff like that and latest operating systems like Sierra, it's still a better operating system in many people's minds than Windows 10, let's say. Going back to your original point, Jerry, of talking about what's considered a better option, bringing these two operating systems together as Microsoft has done, or keeping that separation, I kind of struggle with that sometimes. You know, I get what you're saying about touch points being smaller and everything like that, but I think there could be some real benefit to having a streamlined universal operating system. That's not coming anytime in the near future, I suspect, but there are some nice factors and benefits that you get out of that. But it's tough. I mean, I see both of these companies going in these different directions, obviously, for many years. And I'm by Apple's side, and I feel that it is tough for me, as you guys have said in front of your clients, to talk about how long it is between refreshes and making people wait until the next one, and then making people wait again until they ship weeks later. Some of them just have the patience for it. I think a lot of the people that I work with get that frustration level, but they have faith in Apple and want to keep the faith with them. I'd be interested to see what happens next quarter and just see if Apple shows any light into something new, and we get a peek into something that shows us that there's hope for some changes down the line.
There's no regularity to it. So you don't really know. You don't really know if you should tell the client, well, let's wait on this Mini a little bit longer because they're probably due for a release. You could say that with some assurity, you know, several years ago, or a Mac Pro in this case. But now we don't know. Again, we're professionals. We can adapt. We can find other technology. And I think we need to spend a little bit of time on, like, well, what do you do? Like, what are some of the other things that you can suggest to a client? So I think we definitely should have some follow-up here, probably developing into a second show of what are some of our regular solutions that we use beyond the Apple systems. That's the real difficult thing as a professional, is just we don't have any knowledge of where they're headed. You know, there was a reporter who was criticized pretty aggressively for questioning Tim Cook and asking him during the earnings reports whether they did have a plan and what's their long range plan. I don't think they're rudderless, and I do think they do have a plan. I just think that market share is the phones and the tablets, and that's where they're focusing, and they realize that that's their future. Looking at that studio display just kind of makes me feel a little wistful. has a essence of what the old Apple used to come out with and dazzle folks with.
If we focus for a moment at the consultant side as well, like our jobs, I've tried over the last few years to focus my efforts on mobility too. So I think if any of us are concerned in that aspect of where is this taking us, as a smaller entity, sometimes people are like, well, where is this going to be for us? Where is this going to lead to? Are we going to see problems down the line of less of our clients purchasing new Macs? And I think on the consultancy side, focusing some of your efforts on mobility and mobile device management can really open up some doors for you. And I think there's a lot of that in education. So maybe that's a market that you could focus on. But I think that's where I've been putting my efforts, is into looking into mobility and mobile device management and the educational market.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I mean, it's a question of follow the money, right? You know, Apple's revenue largely comes from iPhone and iPad. It's like over 3/4, I think, compared with Mac and then like other things. I mean, the Mac is like 10, 11, I don't know. So whatever small percent of the total piece of the pie, you know, and maybe it just comes out of that. You know, they're not investing a ton of resources into, you know, innovating in the Mac realm because the iPhone and iPad are doing so well, especially the iPhone. I mean, that's like their cash cow right now. I mean, why would they take resources away from, you know, iPhone development? I mean, look at the iPhone 7. I mean, it's just such an impressive piece of hardware. iOS 10, I'm a little bit less, you know, excited about. Very strong showing on the mobile devices. So I think you're absolutely right, Sam. I mean, that's where Apple's investing. That's what people are buying. That's probably where, you know, that's certainly where Apple's money is. That's probably where our money is coming from too, as consultants.
Yeah, sure. I think we do have a future, and that is a great point, Sam. I don't have any worry there that just because the regular desktop market or the server market is starting to erode away on the Apple side of things, I don't think that, you know, we're going to be jobless. And that's no pun intended there, being jobless.
You had to repeat it.
Yeah, exactly. For those of you following at home. So let's focus a little bit on the product release. I think we all bought pretty quickly. So what did you guys get?
13-inch, 16 gigs of memory, and 1 terabyte storage.
Okay, and is that the 3.1 gigahertz?
Entry-level processor.
Okay.
Yep. I still can't get over the 1 terabyte for your laptop. Yeah, I am getting close, actually, to my... I had to clean out space. Not that I was dangerously close, but I was getting uncomfortably close to my storage capacity. Right. So, I cleared out some space and cleaned up some junk that I had in there. But I don't know, the 1 terabyte, what's that bump in cost again?
It's 400.
Pretty, yeah. I don't know.
I can't wrap my head around that, Sam. Yeah. I agree. I got the entry-level touch bar as well. Both of you guys did not get the non-touch bar, right?
Right.
Right. And I got the 500 gigabyte, $17.99, and just upgraded to the 500 gig.
Did you get the 16 gigs of RAM?
I did not. I'm going to see how that goes. I know this is a first-gen model, so if I have to flip it in a year because I find that I'm a little short-shrifted by not having 16 gigs, I'll do it again.
Well, there probably will be a Kaby Lake upgrade pretty, you know, in the not too distant future, right?
One would hope so, yeah.
So you're probably pretty wise on that, Jerry, because, like, you know, first gen is already a bit kind of a risk. And, you know, not to mention, like, oh, this one's great, but, like, wait till you see the next one kind of thing, you know. You may be wise to, like, have bought to what you need right now, not looking too far into the future. And then you can always, like, flip this one and upgrade. It's probably a
right.
smart.
And I think, Joe, you and I were using 11-inch MacBook Airs from 2012. So this will be a nice refresh for us. And the touch bar, I can almost see myself using that. Some people drive standard car where they're using their left foot to do the clutch and they're doing the right foot for the accelerator instead of just doing it all with the right foot. I kind of see myself doing, you know, some improper driving with the touch bar and using my left hand to do touch bar stuff and my right hand still on the touch pad.
Well, I'm assuming you guys both watched the Apple event in its entirety. You know, I got the popcorn out, dimmed the lights, that kind of thing.
Snuggled up with the wife.
Right, exactly.
Right. Come here, honey.
Did you guys happen to see the Photoshop demo? To, you know, speaking of this dual hand driving of the Mac, the rep from Adobe gave an awesome demo of some Photoshop, like retouching of a photo. And I just thought it was really impressive how she was able to change the color palette with her left hand on the touch bar while, like, actually sort of, you know, painting that in with brushes. Into a layer in Photoshop. You know, I think that really served to illustrate the benefit of the touch bar in general.
Yeah, I watched that twice just because I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss any of what she was doing. Yeah, I'm excited for it. And I think it's going to move the computers forward. There's been a lot of negative press about the USB-C ports, about the some ridiculous whining about the loss of the startup chime, the F-sharp major chord. I mean, come on, guys, put on your big boy pants and let's all march forward. I can't find any validity in any of the arguments that have been floated out there. Yeah, we're paying a couple $100 more, but Apple's never catered to the low end of the market. Whether that's sellable for us as clients, you know, whether it's an attractive sell for the people that we've told, oh, just wait, you know, because this is going to be really good. And then Apple releases their products, dongle hell aside, which I don't agree with at all. Our clients are like, whoa, I got to pay, you know, extra money now. That's just the way it is. And that's how innovation moves forward. And we all suck it up and get the job done.
Yeah, I'm not terribly bothered by a lot of that stuff. I was actually just having a conversation with my wife about some completely separate topics, but just in general, how people love to complain about anything. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those cases. I mean, I just don't see, especially about the startup chime. Give me a break. I mean, there's no real need for it now. And I mean, it's a nice, I guess it gives people the warm and fuzzies, as we like to say, but I don't see the real big deal in making a big stink out of it. But there are always people that they'll love to complain. And with anybody these days having a blog post, we're going to hear from them.
Brief digression on the topic of the startup chime. Just this morning, I had a call from a client who just was really frustrated and really annoyed and all this stuff. And like, this computer, nothing in our office is working. You know, it's one of those where like everything's going wrong at once. And then you have to kind of unpack it and figure out what's actually wrong. And so the issue is that one of the computers was just frozen. And, you know, she thought, coupled with some error about Time Machine, which was just the fact that it was freeing up space, not an actual problem, and a couple other little things that were totally unrelated, she thought was like part of a broader, you know, series of issues all related to the same problem and whatever. Anyway, the whole thing was this Mac was frozen. So I walked her through.
Did you ask her if she wanted to be a snowman?
Oh, frozen. Thank you. All right. Wow. I'm a little slow tonight. So the Mac was frozen, and I'm, you know, do you mind if I just walk you through like forcibly restarting it? And they said they already tried this and, you know, and it's still frozen. And I'm thinking, well, it's probably just that they didn't press the button long enough, you know,
right?
Just,
right, exactly.
Asleep, yeah. And then woke up and it's so like, please let me just walk you. And she, you know, and she's like, I don't have time for this. And isn't this your job? And so this is like my morning started today.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Monday exactly. Morning, has it?
Like, yeah, exactly. Good morning to you too.
Except that it's Tuesday, isn't it? Sorry.
It felt like a Monday morning. So, you know, and it's like, okay, I literally said to her, I said, I'm going to ask you to press a button. And I hope it's not asking too much. And if it is, just let me know. I was like, I'm not trying to be like a jerk about it, but like, I'm literally just asking you to do that. So she was like, all right, I have to switch phones. I'm like, all right. So then she goes over there, she switches the phone. So now we're in the room with the computer, and I walk her through, you know, hold the button down for about 5 seconds or so. Okay. Is it this? Okay. Just, she said, the screen just went black. And then I'm saying, okay, now we're going to wait a few seconds. And then I hear the chime. So there's our friend, the chime. And I'm thinking, that's now I know for sure that she forcibly powered down successfully, and you know, she has a fresh boot. So if it freezes now, I know there's a problem that she actually was successful in rebooting. So
here you're going with that.
Right. So then later I get a text from Jerry, like, this startup chime stuff is ridiculous. I don't know why anyone's complaining. And I'm like, what startup chime stuff? So then you explain it to me and I look into it, and the internet, you know, as a whole is up in arms about the no more startup chime. And I, you know, I'm not going to say that I agree with the internet about this, but I will just have that one brief counterpoint that actually in this case, coincidentally, this very morning, it was actually a little bit helpful in my troubleshooting remotely.
Well, sure. I mean, you're talking about that sound that clues you in as the consultant over the phone, that this helps you out. I get that. I mean, that is kind of big in our world in terms of remote troubleshooting. But I think in general, I think the statement is pretty bogus. But yeah, I've actually been through situations. As you were telling your story, I was like, oh yeah, I get where that would make sense to me, where I would need that damn chime to tell me that person followed my instructions properly and not just put it to sleep.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
I'll give you that one, Joe.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not arguing for like bring back the chime. You know, I'm not going to like buy that domain or anything like that, but it probably already exists anyway.
Let me check.
But, yeah, please do. I'd love to know. But I think, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice the chime. I think the point is that, like, it starts up so quickly, you know, you don't really need that chime. It also wakes, doesn't it power on if you open the lid, even if it's shut down, something like that? There's some new aspect of the power management. You know, the whole idea is, like, the Mac, this is an example of where the two sort of worlds are converging. The Mac is becoming more like iOS. You know, it's just on when you need it. It's available. It's quick. It doesn't have this process that it has to go through for it to be ready for you.
Bringbackthechime.com is available.
You can re-enable it through a terminal command. Moving on, the only legitimate claim
Jerry's done with this conversation.
I think has to do with the RAM. There's been recent reports that the reason why you can't go up to 32 gigs is because they are limited by Skylake. Now, I know that's really convenient to blame Intel when, you know, for product releases. Well, you know, we didn't release the MacBook Pro because Intel, you know, didn't have their mobility chip power consumption, you know, didn't meet our specifications. But supposedly the RAM would be required as this DDR4, and the Skylake can't do 32 gigs with the DDR4 and the low power RAM. That's the real limitation here, you know, for what it's worth.
It also appears that blameintel.com is available. So good opportunities out there still, guys, for the .coms. I don't think that's a big deal. Honestly, the memory, I mean, my MacBook Air maxed out at 8 gigs. I thought for years, like, this is really kind of an issue for me, that kind of thing. With 10.10 and 10.11 in particular, this got much better. I just think that the system got much better at managing memory, whether it's the, you know, compression. I'm not sure exactly what changed, but I have not felt like memory issues have been an issue in the last couple of years. I mean, that said, I'd ordered the 16 gig model because I'm looking to the future. And I also would like the ability to, like, run a VM without worrying. I mean, a VM is a special case, though. Devoting 4 gigs and just, like, setting that amount of memory aside when you've only got 8 is a big deal to run a VM successfully. I think for most users who are just running Mac software, 16 gigs is really not a big limitation for the vast majority of people. And, I mean, Jerry, you're rocking the 8 gigs. So, I mean, it seems like it's not going to be really a big deal for you that it doesn't max out at 32, right?
I'm running on faith here that the 8 gigs will take me through on the 13-inch, and we'll see how that goes. It'll be an interesting comparison, Joe, you with the 16 and me with the 8. Right. Maybe we could have races. We could get together on the weekends and race. There has been a recent discussion that we won't know when to start the show because we have no more startup chime. So
that's true. The internet is up in arms about that too. So, you know, sit tight. We'll figure something out. Okay, guys and gals, the show will go on, right? The show must go on. Isn't that a show business term? Yeah. The criticism can sort of be summarized that this isn't really a pro Mac. You know, they call it a MacBook Pro, but it's not really for pros. Like, if you're a real pro, this isn't a suitable Mac for you because of X, Y, and Z. And examples range from there's no more extension cable for the power adapter in the box. You've got to pay $19 if you need that. And by the way, I'll sell it to you for $10, okay, because I've got about 100 of them. So if anybody needs one,
sold.
If you're freaking out about this, you know, limitation, SciMac can definitely help you make your dreams come true with those extension cables. You know, the dongles, I mean, come on, Jerry, you made the point. Like, this is, like, completely overblown. Like, the fact that,
absolutely,
you know, you need dongles for things. Okay, like, how often do you guys plug anything into your Mac? I mean, I have one, I plug mine in at my desk.
I mean, I'm sitting at my desk right now. I have my Ethernet adapter, and I would need one for maybe one other item that I would plug in. But when I'm on the road or I'm on the go or I'm doing something, I don't have the need for all those dongles. I don't know. Some of this stuff, like I said, people just like to complain. It irks me.
Yeah, when we go on the field, we're using dongles and connections and cables all the time to work with our client machines. But I think we're special cases. I think for the most part, the consumer, general consumer, is going to get their setup, his or her setup, and that's going to be it. You know, and they may have to pay a few dollars to get these connection points to talk to one another. And if they need these adapters, then they need the adapters. But that's what we need to do here to move forward.
Right.
Either that or we don't advance.
Yeah, I mean, because like, what do you want? You want USB 3 built in, you know, like a standard, what do they call those, USB, you know, it would need to be thicker to accommodate it. So now you don't get the thinness, but then people are like, well, I don't care about the thinness. I want to stuff it full of ports. You know, I find that ridiculous. I just can't accept that that's really how people feel about this, that they want a thick laptop with every kind of port built in just in case they need all those options so that they don't have to carry, you know, another ounce of adapters in their computer bag, you know, come on.
Babies.
Yeah. Like, you know, come on. We're professionals, you know, we do this for a living. And so you have an assortment of adapters, like you mentioned, Jerry, and that just stays where you need them. They're on your desk where you plug in. They're in your bag where you might need to work with a client with them. Anyway, that's just a non-issue. It's always like an argument that like this isn't really for professionals because a real professional would like, I don't know, something that's like so impressive and so fast and so, you know, it's like the people that are complaining about it seem to be saying that there's like these vast numbers of professionals out there that just won't even be able to get their work done because this computer is so bad. I really just don't understand it. I don't know. I find it frustrating.
Let's just take a moment here to circle back to how we actually got into this discussion. I think looking at the overall release of the entire product line, I support the development for iOS, and I'm going to champion that. And I realize there's all kinds of potential and opportunity for us as consultants to move forward with mobile devices and, you know, whatever, wherever this road takes us with convergence, I'm all for. But we have real problems that we need to solve right now. In the next, you know, 12 to 36 months. We have clients needing servers, clients needing airport Wi-Fi hotspots, clients needing to replace some of their aging hardware. So we're looking for solutions. So I think we need to focus a little bit on what sort of substitutions are you making? Or are you just all in, all Apple all the time? And, you know, you send your client to the store if they want to run a Mac practice server, and you have them buy a dual core Mac mini that's 2 years old. Or is that what we do? You know, or if we don't, let's talk about some solutions there that we could, you know, offer at least the people listening to the show. So I think we've identified there might be some sort of a problem here, you know, in terms of, you know, the present day. I don't know. What do you guys think?
As far as I can see into the future, I would always want to carry a Mac on a daily basis and use a Mac as my primary workstation at my desk, in the office, at home, on the road. It's the Mac. The iPhone will probably always be in my pocket or close at hand. On the other hand, I think where there's a lot of room for further exploration is in the rest of the ecosystem. Like Jerry, you brought up the aging Airport Extreme hardware. You know, servers getting more attention, but we're sort of not really sure where it fits anymore. And there's a lot of other things to consider. Certainly, the hardware that the server OS typically runs on, the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro, both are long overdue for an upgrade. So this leaves those are the holes in the lineup, I think, where we can look for other, you know, pegs to fit into those holes, like the Synology box in place of the Mac OS X server. No one's taken my Mac away. You can pry it from my cold, dead hands.
Don't
or whatever.
Say it. What's the,
But I'm definitely willing to consider like better Wi-Fi, better networking hardware in general, better server services and things like that. Yeah, looking forward to talking more about that stuff.